from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. 1 hour down, two to go here on a Saturday on 95.7 The Game. Mark Rannig and Evan Giddings with you, talking a lot of Giants baseball so far. Luis Matos is back. Is he here to stay? Evan and I have our doubts. He's back right now because Mike Yastrzemski is on the IL. He was pulled. Yeah, he's gone. Because he was pulled from the game in Birmingham, Alabama 2 days ago at Rickwood Field with what he called side tightness, a side injury. It's an oblique strain for Yastrzemski. He's on the IL. Matos is back. Also on the IL goes Keaton Wynn with another right elbow injury. It's the second time he's been on the IL with that same kind of elbow soreness, elbow pain. And David Villar is also back. They're both in the lineup, Matos and Villar. Villar is playing first base. Matos is playing right field. Matos is batting ninth for the Giants. We could talk a little bit more about Matos and maybe where the Giants should be batting him in the order in a little bit, Evan. But I was scrolling Trevor May's Instagram because he put out that post a couple of days ago about Blake Snell.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's been hurting him and why he's been ineffective so far, and Snell responded. But I was scrolling through, and one of his more recent posts was him reacting to the Los Angeles Dodgers City Connect uniform. I don't know if you've seen them. They just announced that they were one of the few teams that had not had a City Connect jersey just yet. City Connect jerseys, like the Giants have the one that makes them look like a Gatorade bottle, you know, or creamsicle, all that. There's some good ones. There's some bad ones. The Dodgers, essentially, I don't even know how to describe it. It's kind of like the Giants' home jersey base, not white, but close to white. But it's like funfetti, like, you know, a funfetti cake, where you kind of got like the little splotches and dots of color all over the place. That's what the Dodgers, like, base of their jersey is, that off-white jersey with funfetti color all over the place. And then Los Angeles in all caps, black letters across the chest with like a line going through it diagonally. And they got really small numbers above the Los Angeles across the chest, like just below their left shoulder. Not a huge fan of these City Connect jerseys, Evan.
Well, we're not a huge fan of the Dodgers, but I think it just is weird. Like, I still don't know how I feel about it. I think it's probably on the lower end of the City Connect jerseys that I have disdain for, but it's far from the bottom, which in my opinion would be the Philadelphia Phillies. Like, those are just absolutely treasonous. So it's not quite that bad, but it's nothing to write home about. Like, I don't know. What are your favorite City Connect jerseys? I'm kind of ambivalent about the Giants ones.
Washington Nationals is incredible.
Nats are cool.
It's the gray one with the white block WSH across the front, and then they've got the cherry blossoms. Yeah.
Those are solid. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's probably the Padres. I do like the Serpientes. I do like the Arizona Diamondbacks
the
ones.
The Padres is like just the color rush, like pink and bright green.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a party. It's the ones they wore yesterday.
Yeah. Milwaukee Brewers got a good one. The light blue with the Brew Crew in bright yellow across the front. But yeah, not a huge fan of the Dodgers.
Not a fan of the Red Sox. Not a fan of the Mets.
Yeah, the Red Sox look like UCLA every time they wear their color, their jerseys.
Yeah, the Wizards of Eastwood.
I'm looking at Philadelphia's right now, and that is...
They're hideous.
Not great to look at. The jersey starts, just the top, the jersey itself, starts like dark. I don't know if it's black, but very, very dark blue near the bottom, and it kind of fades up to a light blue near the top. And then you got Philly in gigantic lettering. I don't even know what kind of font that is. Almost a little difficult to read, but there's no red whatsoever, and there's a kind of an awkward blue color that is not Philly blue. Yeah, I'm with you. That's not one of the best ones either. Although I will say, I think the New York Mets one might be my least favorite. It looks more like a Yankees. It looks more like a Yankees jersey than it does a Mets jersey. You gotta differentiate yourself from the rest of New York a little bit.
Yeah, I see what you're talking about, especially with the pinstripes. Yeah, if you're the Mets, you can't lean into the Yankees enough.
It's dark gray with the black pinstripes. And
I do
just
like
has
the color
NYC.
Scheme. I'm not going to lie. The NYC font is old school. I do like it, but you're right. It is pretty close to the Yankees. Although I got to say, anything Lindor wears, it's just going to be swag.
Yeah, he can make it look good. And he's been playing better lately. And that could bring us into a conversation about the trade deadline, Evan, because for a long time, we've kind of been thinking the New York Mets are going to be sellers. And they still might be. But ever since Grimes came out and threw their first pitch, they've been the best team in baseball. Maybe they consider buying and not selling at the trade deadline.
Yeah, they've been anything but grimacing lately. And at this point, though, Grandy, I mean, who is a seller? The Marlins and the Rockies? I think that's about it. Like, the Giants right now are bringing up the rear in regards to the wild card after the two bottom teams in the NL, but they're two games back. And in between them and the final wild card spot, there's six teams. So nobody at this point has reason to sell. Even on the American League side, you got 5.5 back. Toronto, Texas, Detroit, they probably don't feel like they're necessarily out of it yet. So we've heard that Toronto is a team that might want to sell someone like Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Then their general manager comes out and says they're not doing that. There's no chance. But as they continue to lose now four in a row, they might be back in the sellers category. I think it's going to be more difficult to identify who a seller is at the trade deadline than an actual buyer, because I think the only teams that have actually put players out there that are tradable is probably Chicago and maybe Miami. Well, I guess Miami traded a Rise. So
did. Who else do they have to trade? Brian De La Cruz? I mean, who else?
De La Cruz.
I guess you could trade some pitching.
Yeah, but they're probably not moving off of any of their good young guys.
Trade Lizardo, former A?
Probably not. Someone like Tanner Scott, though, is an interesting name. He's their closer. He's left-handed. He's not great, but at the beggars can't be choosers at this point, and a lefty bullpen arm is something that the Giants might need.
Yeah, the National League is particularly interesting because, as you're talking about, there's so many teams that are jumbled up around the three wildcard spots. If you look right now, as you mentioned, you've got Atlanta, San Diego, and Arizona currently who have claim to the three wildcard spots. St. Louis is technically tied with Arizona but has played two fewer games. So you've got four teams there that are essentially fighting for the three playoff spots. And then behind those four teams, you've got Washington a half game back, the Mets a game back, the Reds a game and a half back, the Pirates a game and a half back, and the Cubs and Giants both two games back. So you have so many teams that are there fighting for those three NL wildcard spots, and you're not quite sure who's going to sell. I was reading an article that was written yesterday by Jesse Rogers on ESPN. He's trying to make sense of the muddled National League standings and how it affects the MLB trade deadline. And he separated all of these teams that are in that jumbled wild card picture into three categories. The sure adders, as in the buyers at the deadline, the teams that are on the fence and likely to subtract. So of the nine teams that are fighting right now for these playoff spots, he took out the Atlanta Braves because they're going to make a playoff spot. They have distanced themselves from anybody else, and they could potentially still win the NL East. Who knows if Philly slows down a little bit. They're a playoff team. Essentially, there's two other spots up for grabs. Everybody else is fighting for them. Nine teams fighting for those two. So Jesse Rogers, ESPN, in the sure adders category, the group that he feels are very likely to buy: the St. Louis Cardinals, the Arizona Diamondbacks, the San Diego Padres, and the Cincinnati Reds. Cardinals, Diamondbacks, Padres, and Reds, the group that he expects to buy. On the fence, the teams that you're not really sure what they're going to do: Chicago Cubs, Pittsburgh Pirates, San Francisco Giants. Cubs, Pirates, Giants on the fence at the trade deadline. And then the likely to subtract, Jesse Rogers lists the New York Mets and the Washington Nationals. I threw out the Mets to begin this conversation because they've been playing great baseball of late. Look at the Mets now. They've won 8 of their last 10, and they are a game up on the Giants now, and they're only a game out of a playoff spot as we currently speak. So maybe they're less likely to subtract, and maybe you move them up to on the fence. Who knows? The only point is, Evan, that because you have so many teams that are so close to each other, specifically in the National League, if the Giants feel like they have to go out and buy to give them a chance to win, there is going to be a ton of competition for all those arms, for those bats, for whoever it is, because there are so many teams in the National League and the American League, but specifically the NL, who are going to be in on almost every single player. Not going to be too many of them, because who is going to sell? There's going to be so much competition for all these potential movers at the deadline.
And there's teams that also have track records of aggression. You know, you look at San Diego, who obviously has been involved in some big-name deals, especially around the deadline. I mean, Soto comes to mind, Josh Hader. This last offseason, they traded a massive haul for Dylan Cease. So they're not afraid to move guys and prospects to get a big boy, or just to get help in general. But even a team like Arizona, you know, they went out and traded for Paul Sewald last year. They went out and got a closer.
He was good for them in the postseason.
He was. He's a big reason why they ended up making the World Series, you know. So they're not afraid to wheel and deal. They ended up acquiring Suarez again this last offseason to replace Longoria. You know, they're not afraid to get aggressive. The Giants don't really have a track record of getting aggressive for an actual impact player. I mean, what was it? A.J. Pollock was, I think, their primary acquisition last year.
God, just disgusting.
Yeah, and we were kind of joking about it, but before the show, I was just looking at, all right, you know, who's some likely trade candidates out there and who's actually linked to the Giants as potential suitors. And the first name that pops up, and God love him, but it's Paul DeJong. It essentially sounds like a slightly younger Nick Ahmed.
He was a Giant last year.
Yes, and what, he ended up getting released, right?
I mean, he was a Giant last year for like 3 weeks or something.
Yeah, and now he's doing his thing in Chicago. He is, to his credit, hitting a lot better.
Yeah, with the
Although,
White Sox.
Did you see the this is an aside. Did you see the way the White Sox lost yesterday?
No, I don't think I did.
Paul DeJong was involved. He hit a line drive to center field, and the runner on first base forgot how many outs there were, started running around towards third, and then they doubled him off to end the game.
Oh, no.
I mean, that's the kind of season that the Chicago White Sox are having right now. If you want somebody off that roster, it's Luis Robert. I just don't think the Giants have enough, even if they were willing to pony up to beat the offer of another team. But let me ask you this, though, Grant, because you just went through the nine teams. If there's two more spots, like, who are the two teams that you believe in the most?
So the group that we're choosing from, we're excluding Atlanta, because whether it's in a wild card or winning a division, the Phillies and Braves are making the playoffs, both of them combined.
They're getting in.
Yeah. Padres, Diamondbacks, Cardinals, Nationals, Mets, Reds, Pirates, Cubs, Giants. That's the group of nine fighting for the final two NL wild card spots. Which teams do I believe in the most? Which two do I believe in the most out of that group? No one is inspiring that much confidence right now. Honestly, maybe just because of talent, and it goes against my better judgment because of what happened last year and how much of a mess that place was. And I know you might, you know, be happy to hear me pick this team, but I might have to go with the Padres just because they have a lot of talent. That lineup is still pretty darn good. Yu Darvish is going to come back, and he'll be healthy soon enough. I think it might be San Diego for me, number one, but I don't know who I'd pick behind them.
Yeah, I think the Padres are number one for me because of the talent, because of the top end of the rotation, and they also have a pretty decent bullpen this season. They just have not been able to, well, they haven't lost as many close games as last year, but like they're a team that I think is probably going to be around 84, 85 wins, which is looking like it might get you in. Hell, you might be able to get a playoff team in this year with a sub 500 record, which would be
maybe
terrible.
Right now, the final wild card spot is 500.
Exactly. Yeah, you got nine teams at or below 500. The other team that I probably believe in the most, it's got to be between Arizona and St. Louis, and I think I'm leaning Cardinals just because their rotation is a lot better. Their pitching staff in general is a lot better than Arizona. The Diamondbacks can hit the crap out of the ball, but I don't know outside of Zach Gallen if there's anybody I truly trust in their rotation. They're a decent team. I think last year was a little fluky. The fact that a team was able to get to the World Series with a negative like 25 run differential, I think that was a little fluky. And there's just something about them that I just don't necessarily believe in. So if I had to choose two teams right now, I think it's the Padres and the Cardinals. The question is, can the Giants get into that conversation? I don't know if their position players give them the talent level to do it, but it obviously comes down to how many of their starters they can keep healthy, because that's the one area of strength of this team that stands out, albeit probably because of process of elimination.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. And I think I definitely agree with you on the Arizona side of it. Honestly, maybe I'm just going crazy. I'm a fan of the Washington Nationals. Their pitching staff quietly is actually pretty decent.
Yeah,
and
I guess
CJ Abrams can't at the top of their order. Jesse Winker's been tearing the cover off the ball lately.
Their offense as a whole hasn't been very good, but you're right. They got a couple standouts. Any staff with Patrick Corbin on it, I just cannot
McKenzie
get behind.
Gore, though, he's been shoving lately, Evan.
Yeah, former Padre. Yeah. Same with CJ Abrams.
Yeah. Washington, yeah, I mean, that was the big trade. Washington, they're up there right now. I mean, they're a half game out behind the Diamondbacks for that final wild card spot of the moment. But
Washington Nationals remind me of like the Houston Rockets from this past season.
Maybe they're a year early.
A year early, they're going to have a couple runs in them, and then you're going to actually, like, if you, I don't know, no one around here probably does, but if you actually watch the Washington Nationals play, you're like, how is this team any good? Because there's such a bunch of guys that you don't know.
You'd assume they're like 15 under 500, but they're right at 500.
Yeah, they're better than the Giants.
They're better than the Giants. So my question to you would be, of these nine teams that we're going through, Padres, Diamondbacks, Cardinals, Nationals, Mets, Reds, Pirates, Cubs, and Giants, you talked about teams that you have the most faith in, the most confidence in, the most reason to believe that they can be one of the teams that takes one of those two wild card spots. How far down the list do you have to go before you get to the Giants? Because
I see what you're saying.
For me, I mean, it's Arizona. The Cardinals, I think, are certainly ahead of the Giants for me. I wouldn't
put the Nationals over the Giants.
But you get in the group like the Mets, the Reds, the Pirates, and the Giants, and the Cubs. Like, it's just all kind of the same. Eh.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of eh in the National League right now. Just change it to the eh. But I think if I'm looking at these nine teams, yeah, Padres, Cardinals, Diamondbacks. To me, the biggest coin flip is Chicago and San Francisco, because I think the Cubs are a lot better than they've played. Their bullpen is just absolutely atrocious.
Oh,
like, they've
God.
Blown 16 or 17 saves this year now. That is the only thing really preventing them from actually being in the NL Central race.
Imagine if they just didn't blow five of those. They'd be 41-35.
Yes, yeah, they'd be challenging the Brewers right now. So I think the Cubs, to me, are a team that could use the most help on the back end at the deadline. If they want to pony up, I do think they actually have reason to believe that they could make a run, because their offense is pretty good, and they got a couple of horses, but their offense is really where they make their hay. I think I'm probably taking the Giants over the Cubs right now, just because I think the Cubs are prone to many more meltdowns, even than the Giants have been. I don't believe in Pittsburgh. I'm sorry. I know they have a couple of young, really good arms, Skeens.
Jared Jones.
And Jaron Jones.
On the bump tonight.
And even Cincinnati, who's got a plus run differential, I don't believe in them either. Cincinnati is a team that, to me, is fraudulent. And then the Mets right now, I also think, are going to come back down to earth. And to the point where we're going to have to basically figure out how much they want to get rid of someone like Pete Alonso, because I don't think that they're going to re-sign him in free agency. So I think I would have the Giants right neck and neck with the Cubs, but I would give them the edge. So in this conversation, I'd probably have the Giants fourth of the nine teams.
Fighting for two playoff spots. So,
yes.
I mean, you're within striking distance. I think that's a fair range. The one thing about the Giants is, you look at all these teams right now, they have the most talent. It seems like they have the most room for growth because they have the most talent that is on the injured list currently. And not everyone is healthy, but the Giants are definitely not healthy, and they have a lot of room to grow in that regard. You just got to hope that they eventually become healthy. This whole conversation has, you know, kind of been based off what I read from Jesse Rogers, who we wrote on ESPN yesterday about this muddled National League wildcard race. Here's the little blurb he wrote about the San Francisco Giants. And again, he had the Giants in the on-the-fence category alongside the Cubs, Pirates, and Giants, or alongside the Cubs and Pirates with the Giants, for what these teams should do at the trade deadline. And what Jesse Rogers wrote about the Giants was, quote, "Who knows might be the best way to sum up what our experts thought of the Giants' most likely deadline plans. Under Farhan Zaidi, San Francisco has kept things close to the vest. The Giants have landed in the muddled middle because they are void of stars in a competitive NL West that includes fellow wildcard competitors in the Diamondbacks and Padres, all of them well behind the division leading Dodgers." Quote, "Maybe San Francisco does what Seattle likes to do," one scout said, "a little buying and selling, but I'm not sure of their direction just yet." I don't know about you, I hate that. Pick a lane and stick to it. Buy or sell. Don't do this middle ground. We're going to get someone, but we're also going to sell this other guy. Pick a lane. Go to one extreme or the other. Don't dilly-dally in the middle as he did last year.
Well, it sounds like you already have your mind made up of which side you want to fall on.
If the deadline were like this week, like if it was coming up in a couple of days, I don't want the Giants to sell. Yes.
What?
And I'm not saying like sell Ramos and sell Bailey and sell Logan Webb. And maybe your response is, well, what are you going to get for the players that you sell? Okay.
No, I'm just curious who you would sell.
Michael Conforto. You'd think about Blake Snell and you'd think about Matt Chapman. Because you don't know if these guys are even going to be back on your team next year.
I think that's also why it'd be tough to get much back for them.
Maybe.
Because they're effectively rentals. Now, maybe you could. I think Snell is probably the piece that everybody wants. But this is the other issue too: is everything that you're selling is a suppressed is at a suppressed price, and it's not just because of the contract situations. Conforto is also a free agent at the end of this year, but it's because they haven't played very well.
Yes.
So
you need Snell.
If I'm
to
trading
come
for
back
a guy that's got a 90
a
ERA, I don't care if he won a Cy Young last year. I'm looking at Farhan. I'm saying, dude, you're not getting a top three prospect for a guy that. Yeah, is giving up
we'll
14
give you
hits
our
per
17th
innings.
Overall prospect. Here you go, Farhan. You like that?
Yeah, and obviously Farhan's going to tell him to put in his pipe and smoke it. Like that, then that's Zaidi's right, but that's why I think we're headed for the inevitable path that has also followed Zaidi pretty much since he's taken the reins, which is, well, we're a little bit in the deep end, but we're kind of in the shallow end. We're just going to be sitting in the 4-foot zone, and we're going to end up with a Paul DeJong. I mean, I seriously, like, I think that's the floor of the deadline.
If they acquire Paul DeJong for a second consecutive season, I might rip my hair out.
The only thing that I feel confident in the Giants doing at the trade deadline is pissing everyone off.
No doubt. Well, the funny thing is that quote, this one scout that was quoted in this Jesse Rogers piece on ESPN, again, the quote, "Maybe San Francisco does what Seattle likes to do, a little buying and selling, but I'm not sure of their direction just yet." Seattle's playing really good baseball right now, so the fans are relatively content. If you ask Seattle fans how they feel about their front office, it is how Giants fans feel about the Giants front office. Seattle fans absolutely hate the Seattle front office. Their comment last year was, well, yeah, we're just trying to win like 55% of our games. That's our goal. 55% of our games.
Well, it would get you in the playoffs, and if you're the Diamondbacks, it would get you to the World Series. But I think Mariners fans, to me, have a little more reason to be frustrated with their front office because they actually do have talent. No disrespect, but they actually do have players that are exciting, that are good.
We talk about the Giants pitching staff.
Yeah, when Jesus
healthy,
Christ.
Maybe one of the best.
Or Jesus Christo.
The Mariners, the best pitching staff in baseball.
Yeah, right now. And not all of them are even healthy, too. So, yeah. Am I taking, right now, Snell, Webb, and Hicks over Gilbert, Castillo, and Kirby? Probably not. And I don't know if a lot of people have heard of those names, but you should
great.
Be watching them. They're very, very
also
good.
Also throw in East Bay guy Brian Wu, who's been awesome.
He got touched up his last outing.
Yeah, he was not good a couple days ago. But
you hate to see it.
But yeah, I mean, that's the situation that the Giants are in. And you look at a team like the Mariners who have all of that pitching, they are undoubtedly going to be buyers of the trade deadline. You threw out a name like Luis Robert. He's going to be highly coveted if he's available. I would circle the Mariners as a team to potentially go and get a bat like that, which means if you're the Giants, you are relatively eager to help out the team if possible. But because there's so many other teams who are better positioned and who have a better, more realistic reason to believe that their team is capable of doing something this year, you might be less encouraged to give up a player, a prospect of more value than, say, a team like the Mariners, who can realistically say, maybe we're just one piece away from actually going to a World Series. Can you say that if you're the Giants? Probably not.
No, absolutely not. Not like there is not one move right now out there that puts the Giants into World Series contender category.
So you're already operating like from behind when you try and go out and capitalize on certain teams selling.
Yeah, like no, they're dependent on wild cards. That's one of the reasons why. I mean, I expected the Giants to be better this year, and I expected them to kind of sneak into the wild card. But one of the reasons why we talked about, I think their win total was like 85.5 or something. One of the reasons that I was pumping the brakes on 85-90 is because they have a lot of flawed players, and there is a possibility that those flawed players all reveal their flaws, unfortunately, it appears, at the same time, whether it's because they're injury prone, whether it's because they're hitting out of place, whether it's because they're all slumping at the same time, or whether it's just because they can't get on the same page. Like the Giants right now are juggling a lot of different balls that it feels like are different weights and sizes, and they haven't been able to get into a rhythm whatsoever the first nearly 80 games of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. All right, I got a couple more thoughts on the trade deadline and the Giants' plans, and I'm seeing the YouTube chat powered by First NorCal Credit Union and some texts on the Xfinity mobile text line coming in about it. 888-957-9570. You can also join the show by calling that number, 888-957-9570. Giants at the deadline, buy or sell or both. Luis Matos is back, batting ninth in St. Louis today. We can talk a little bit more about Matos and the Giants. And we got to have a conversation about the NBA offseason as a whole, and specifically Klay Thompson. A little bit of news trickling out, nothing done. We don't really know a ton, but we can talk about Klay and the Warriors offseason as well. That's coming up on the other side as we continue on a Saturday right here on 95.7 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. Hour and a half gone. We're halfway home here on a Saturday on 95.7 The Game. Mark Randy and Evan Giddings with you. We got some Klay Thompson and Warriors NBA offseason talk to get into in a little bit. Some developments to make you aware of coming up in a little bit. But we're talking... Yeah, it's coming up from Klay. I mean... Klay is not going to speak soon, but Mike Dunleavy Jr. is going to speak soon on Monday, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. You can follow it all here on 95.7 The Game on Monday. Everything that Mike Dunleavy says, you will hear here on 95.7 The Game on Monday. I'm sure the first question, the first couple of questions will be about Klay Thompson. Well, maybe Kevon Looney and Chris Paul mixed in there as well, but we will get a Klay Thompson question relatively early in that, and that's coming up on Monday afternoon here on 95.7 The Game, and Evan and I will get into that in just a little bit. But talking a lot of Giants baseball right now, a little bit of a deadline conversation, because while we are still a good 5+ weeks away from the trade deadline, this is the opportunity for teams to position themselves for the trade deadline. I don't know how you feel about this, Evan, and this is something I threw out to Willard and Dibbs yesterday, our afternoon show during the week here on 95.7 The Game, and the guys disagreed with me, and I have a feeling you might as well. My, like, baseline, when I'm rooting for a team, specifically a baseball team, and it's different for basketball and NFL trade deadlines, but for a baseball team, I feel like, in my opinion, the baseline should be to sell. You go into every season, and the baseline is, we're going to sell at the trade deadline. The only reason that changes is if the team that we're talking about here, in this case the Giants, if they do something before the trade deadline that proves to you that they deserve a move to be made to help them out and to try to win, then, okay, you think about buying and you see what the options are and you see what the market holds and you go out and you try to buy. But the baseline is to sell. And if you don't go out and prove anything, prove that this team deserves help, that they deserve a move to be made, then you stick to your baseline and your baseline is to sell. I don't like this idea of a team who's barely over 500 or under 500 looking at it as if, yeah, we should go out and buy and we should sell some prospects and damage our farm to get a guy who's maybe going to hit a couple of home runs in the month of September and maybe win you a game or two and maybe get into a wild card game when you lose that. Like, the risk does not seem worth it to me. So in my opinion, the baseline should be to sell, and the only reason you should buy is if your team proves that they deserve a move to be made for them. And the Giants, in my opinion, have not come close to proving that they deserve a move to be made for them.
Yeah, but I do think it is a little like the Warriors, where the Giants probably have pieces that they value that other teams don't. And the Giants probably think that their players are a little higher than other teams do. And when I think about selling, my first question, okay, what am I going to sell? I personally wouldn't sell Snell because I think that there's a decent chance that he opts in and comes back next season, which I want him for. I think the same can be said about Chapman. Conforto, I wouldn't mind selling. I just don't really think you're going to get much back for him. If there's anything on this roster that's worth acquiring, it's probably your younger players.
Who you're not going to sell.
And I'm not giving up Ramos. I'm not giving up, Kyle Harrison.
Not giving up Patrick Bailey.
No, I'm not giving up Patrick Bailey. Hell no. No, especially not a catcher. I think Patrick Bailey, by the way, is probably the one guy that I feel the most confident in being able to lead the Giants for the better part of a decade. If you're going to put stock in one player, it's probably him.
Four hits at Rickwood,
but he's also already probably the best defensive catcher in at least the National League.
God, this team can't throw anybody out in the base pass, though. It's not Bailey's fault. It's the pitching staff's fault. They allow the most stolen bases in the league. It is frustrating.
Yeah, it'd probably be worse if Bailey wasn't behind there, because half the time it's also just, okay, how am I going to be able to run on Bailey? I also think a lot of times it's, okay, you know, am I going to be able to run on a particular pitcher? A lot of them are late in games against bullpen guys. Yeah, you're right. I don't think it's necessarily on Bailey. But the point still is, if I'm selling something, another team, I think, is going to ask for whatever the Giants don't want to give up. And that's why I think they end up in a stalemate and running into a brick wall, is because whatever I want as a team that's actually contending, or even a team that would be able to feel like they could pluck a younger player, the Giants are just going to look at them and say, sorry, you know, appreciate the offer, but we're not really willing to do that right now. And it feels like the Giants haven't been really willing to do much at the deadline during any of Farhan Zaidi's tenure. Even Chris Bryant was a relatively inexpensive trade that he made, and it also wasn't necessarily impactful. So the Giants' status quo, I think, is going to remain at the deadline. And again, I think the only thing that's certain is that people are just going to be pissed off about it.
Yeah, I really like this conversation, and I think you make a lot of good points, and I want to continue it, but we talked about some of the Klay Thompson developments.
I was hoping you'd get to it.
We did just have a little bit of news.
Yes, we do.
That just came down the wire. Nothing final, and we don't know where he's signing. We don't know what's going to happen, but this comes from Anthony Slater, our Warriors insider on The Athletic. Let me just read the first two little paragraphs from Anthony Slater's latest piece. This comes from Anthony Slater via The Athletic. I am reading it word for word. Quote, Klay Thompson isn't currently mulling a shorter than desired offer from the Golden State Warriors. Despite a wide open negotiation window, there isn't a 1-year, 2-year, or 3-year deal on the table, because nothing is currently on the table according to league sources. There's been no productive discussion between the Warriors and Thompson or his representatives. Talks are essentially frozen. With free agency now less than 10 days away, Thompson's exit from the only franchise he has ever known feels closer and more probable than ever before. End quote. That's the first two paragraphs from Anthony Slater's latest on The Athletic, and he is reporting that the Golden State Warriors not only haven't offered Klay Thompson a contract of the length that he wants or of the amount that he wants, they have not offered him a contract, period, and that talks are essentially frozen. Again, this one line from Anthony Slater via The Athletic. With free agency now less than 10 days away, Thompson's exit from the only franchise he has ever known feels closer and more probable than ever before. Evan, this is gigantic news for the Warriors and Klay Thompson. We were previously led to believe via past reports that the Warriors had offered Klay maybe a 2-year deal, but he was holding out for a 3-year deal, maybe a little bit more money. Evan, this makes it seem as if the Golden State Warriors, not makes it seem, the report is specifically saying the Warriors and Klay Thompson have not been negotiating at all, and the Warriors have not even offered Klay any kind of contract, let alone a 2 or 3 year contract.
Yeah, it's fascinating, because there was reports that the Warriors were willing to pony up for something in the 2-year range, and then Monty Poole reported per sources that Klay's looking for a 3-year deal. So it did appear as if the issue is not necessarily just money, it was years. But this latest report from Anthony Slater makes it all very probable that Klay Thompson's not going to be back next season. And it's because neither side really wants each other. I think that's huge, especially for a player that has given as much to this organization as Klay Thompson has. The fact that Klay has obviously, according to this, what I take from it, he has not been happy with the way that the Warriors have approached his contract situation going back to last summer with the 2-year for $48 million offer that they gave him. And since that point, the relationship has seemingly eroded. And that's an issue. If you're trying to keep this player, I think the Warriors want to appear like they want to keep Klay Thompson. But it does not appear to me, Mark, from this report, that the Warriors have much interest in bringing Klay Thompson back unless it's on their terms. And Klay Thompson is clearly looking to keep the ball in his court. And as a result of that, both sides are at an impasse.
It does seem that way. And I'm reading a little bit more from this Anthony Slater piece via The Athletic. And there's more notes coming out from Slater, including this most recent tweet. All signs point to the Warriors retaining Kevon Looney past his guarantee date on Monday, keeping him at $8 million for next season, per sources. Always possible he could be part of an offseason trade, but an outright release is unlikely. That comes from Slater. But continuing to read this piece in The Athletic, Slater later writes, quote, part of the Warriors' calculus, it seems, is that Thompson could discover a lukewarm free agent market and eventually return at a bargain rate. So it seems as if, Evan, the Golden State Warriors, while you're right, and they've outwardly said it numerous times this offseason, more so right when the season ended as opposed to lately, but they've said time and time and time again, we want Klay back. Now, if they finish that sentence, it would say at the right price and for the right amount of years, but in a vacuum, yes, we'd rather have Klay on this team than not. But what the Warriors are betting on, Evan, is that the interest from around the league, not as great as maybe we previously thought. Slater says, quote, there has been no traction between Thompson and the Orlando Magic, according to league sources. Other cap space teams like the Sixers and Thunder could only theoretically be in the mix. Maybe Klay's market isn't as robust as previously thought. And while he might be frustrated and upset with the Warriors, as him unfollowing the Warriors on Instagram last week might suggest, maybe eventually, after he tests the waters, he comes crawling back and the Warriors happily sign him to a one-year, two-year deal for not as much money as Klay was originally hoping for. That seems to be the Warriors' ideal plan, perhaps.
Ideal plan, yes. I think it also, to me, highlights how important all these teams, since specifically the Warriors, are taking the second apron. I mean, there are a lot of things the Warriors will not be able to do if they are over, and it appears they're going to be penny-pinching whoever they can, because once GP2 opts in, well, there's $9 million that's gone. They're trying to figure out, I'm sure, what to do with Chris Paul's contract. It might be more valuable just to move off of him completely and get that $30 million back. And then where does that leave you with Klay? It also does, Mark, I don't know if you're sniffing this, but it does feel like if they're going to essentially let Klay go out and dictate his own market to then eventually come back, which I think they would be open to. It's not as if they just want him gone completely. I think they just want him at their price, and they're not willing to move off of it. But it does have me sniffing a little bit. Like they're trying to acquire a big player. Like they're trying to acquire a big boy and a big salary, more importantly, because if Klay Thompson is somebody that they're not willing to say go above, $20 million, Malik Monk got around 18 and a half or 19, I don't necessarily have an issue with that, but it has to mean to me that they're trying to see how they can configure adding another piece and still staying under that second apron. All of these things are in motion and are probably, difficult machinations, but to essentially just say, hey, four-time champ, piece of our fabric of a franchise, go out and do what you got to do, test the market, have fun in free agency. We'll be here eventually when you find out that no other team is going to give you anything better than what we have to offer. That doesn't sound like Klay's a priority to me. That sounds like Klay is an ancillary piece to the bigger picture this offseason, which is they are trying to find a star. They are trying to find a secondary offensive option, a running mate for Steph, a Robin, whatever you want to call it. That, to me, is the emphasis of the Warriors this offseason, and I think that's why Klay Thompson, quote-unquote, according to this story from Slater, doesn't really fit right now. He might fit in the future, but If talks have completely frozen, that doesn't sound like a player that's a priority to me.
Yeah, you're right. It does not sound that way. And if you're just joining us, latest report from Anthony Slater of The Athletic on Klay Thompson. He says, talks between Klay and the Warriors are essentially frozen per sources. There has been no offer made. It's more probable than ever he may leave the only franchise he's known, regardless of his market. That's how he wrote his tweet when he tweeted out the link to the article. In the article, deal, he says there isn't a 1 year, 2 year, or 3 year deal on the table. That sentence from the actual article, Evan, makes it seem as if the Warriors maybe had offered him something. Maybe they offered him a 2 year deal, but he declined, and the Warriors since pulled it off the table. And that's what the 415 on the Xfinity Mobile is texting right now. Couldn't they have offered, say, a 2 year deal, which Clay declined, and no counter has been made? That could also mean no deal on the table. And yes, the way that the article is written, 415, that could very well be the reality. Maybe the Warriors offered a 2 year deal that Clay declined, and the Warriors since took it off the table entirely. However, the way Slater wrote it in the tweet where he tweeted out and promoted the article was all signs point to the Warriors, or pardon me, talks between Clay and the Warriors are essentially frozen. There has been no offer made. So it's not just that there's nothing on the table currently, it's that no offer has been made during this offseason period where the Warriors have exclusive rights to negotiate with their guy. He is their free agent. No one else can legally, at the moment, talk to Klay Thompson about a contract. Only the Golden State Warriors have, and according to Anthony Slater, who is as plugged in as anyone around the Golden State Warriors, Evan, he says, quote, there has been no offer made. The Warriors have had endless time to at least negotiate and work something out. There has been no offer made. You are right. If that does not say you're not our priority at this stage, then I don't know what else would.
And I also think it kind of reveals something that we've all been told or sort of felt or thought or had an inkling about, but hasn't been concretely stated, which is Joe Lacob's a businessman. Joe Lacob is willing to do whatever it takes to move the franchise forward.
To be cutthroat if he has to.
If he has to. With a four-time champion. If he has to.
If he thinks it makes the team better, then he's probably willing to do it.
Lacob's here to win. Lacob's here to make the playoffs. Lacob's here to make NBA Finals runs. He's here to make championship runs. Now, I don't know if they can do it next season, but that's the goal, right? And if Klay Thompson is perceived by some as more or less a part of the solution than another guy, then, yeah, he might be on his way out. The part that's interesting to me, too, though, Mark, is that it does appear from the report that they're going to pick up Kevon Looney's $8 million contract. I don't know about you, and maybe I'm in the minority. I think that also signals they're trying to work a trade. I don't think...
Including Kevon Looney.
Including Kevon Looney. I think that's why the $8 million is valuable. I think that's why we haven't heard much about Chris Paul and the decision about his contract. The thing is, in order to kind of aggregate deals or to combine deals, you have to be below the second apron. And that's where perhaps the Klay Thompson contract comes in. Okay, so if we keep the $43 million off the books, and if we keep Klay at a certain number, well, then we can operate under the second apron, combine contracts, move pieces, and acquire something else. It just... I don't know. I'm sniffing, Mark, that there's something bigger that's on its way. And as much as Klay Thompson not being a Golden State Warrior, I don't want to belittle that. That is huge. He's been here his entire life in his career, and he has given so much to this franchise. But again, it just kind of has me thinking that Klay is not even a domino at this point. He's more just seen as a cash slot. And that's where Joe Lacob, the cutthroat businessman, to me, is starting to emerge.
Yeah. Let's go out to the phones. We're reacting to this latest report from Anthony Slater of The Athletic, reporting that there has been no offer made from the Warriors to Klay Thompson. Not just a three-year deal, as was reported that Klay wanted. Not a two-year deal. Not even a one-year deal. That is the report from Anthony Slater of The Athletic. Out to the phones we go at 888-957-9570. Up next is Austin in San Jose. What's up, Austin? You're on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, happy Saturday, Mark and Evan. How you guys doing? Listen, great report. Interesting news. Not really surprising. From my standpoint, I think that the market value is really what we need to look at. So what is the market for Klay Thompson? Not what the fans here think he's worth based on nostalgia and what he's done and all that. That has nothing to do with his current value. So very curious, what is Klay's current value outside of Warrior Land? I think we're about to find out. I don't think he's as good as Malik Monk. So I think that if you were looking at a baseline, I can't imagine that he'd make more money than Malik Monk right now, because I don't view him as being as valuable. The other part of it is, it's not just the Clay issue either, though, man. You talked about the finances. That's a big part of this. But really, if we looked at the Warriors this year and said, okay, Clay on the team, Clay now on the team. The ensemble, what I call the ensemble, just like a band, is not very good. I mean, you, no matter which team, which matter which player you like, don't like, you want to take off the team, is the team good enough right now collectively? But I would say no. So the reality is that they're going to have to do something. I hope to God that Joe Lacob's making some moves, because if we're looking at so far, we got Payton opting in. We've got them saying they're going to bring back Looney. I mean, come on, man. I mean, and if we're saying that everybody wants Klay Thompson back, do we really believe that that team has any chance of making any noise? So, yeah, we better hope as Warrior fans that something is going on in the background, guys. Otherwise, it's going to be a pretty dismal all season. But I got faith, man. I think they are working on something, Dunleavy and company, and I believe there's something coming. So I'll just listen. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Austin. You mentioned the Malik Monk contract that he just got recently from the Sacramento Kings. 4 years, about $78 million, which is just over $19 million per year on average. Is Clay worth that much, Evan, you think? $19.5 million a year? He's not getting a four-year contract, specifically not from the Golden State Warriors, but $19.5 million per year. Worth more or less than that?
I mean, I think he's worth $20 million to somebody, and allegedly that was the range that the Orlando Magic are kind of looking at. The issue is probably years for a lot of people, because not many want to acquire, you know, a declining shooter at age 35 who is not as capable a defender as he was even a couple of years ago. I think Klay Thompson's best value is still with Golden State because of kind of the relationships and the connections he has with the team and with the franchise. But you know, Austin mentioned something about, you know, the Warriors kind of trying to figure out where Klay fits monetarily speaking. That also, if that is the case, and I think it is, they're trying to figure out their books, but then you would imagine that there would at least be a number. Like, there would be some sort of rumor of a number that the Warriors are trying to bring Klay back at, that they're thinking about, that perhaps they've floated to his agent. But there's been no contract negotiations, it seems like, since he turned down 2 for $48 last offseason.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't happen during the regular season. They put that on hold, put it on the back burner. Klay said, basically, I'm not talking about it. We're going to do it in the offseason. The moment that the NBA Finals end, you're allowed to start negotiating with your own players. There hasn't been an offer made, and it's been over a week. We've seen Siakam receive a max extension. We've seen Monk return to Sacramento at the full value that they could offer him. We're going to start to see this next week preceding free agency. Other teams court their own players and bring them back.
We saw a relatively big-name trade, Caruso and Josh Giddey.
Teams are making moves. And again, the Warriors not even having a contract on the table or an idea or a number for Klay Thompson, I think is very telling.
How about this? And we want to hear from you guys for the next hour plus. We're with you until noon here on 95.7 The Game, reacting to this report from Anthony Slater about Klay Thompson, that the Warriors have not even made an offer to Klay this offseason. So give us a call, 888-957-9570. We're also keeping an eye on our Xfinity mobile text line at the same number, 888-957-9570, in our YouTube chat as always. But this is a further piece from Anthony Slater in his report, and I can't wait for the break here in a couple minutes so we can read this thing in full. I'm just getting bits and pieces of it right now. This is another portion of the report, and I'm going to read it word for word. Thompson's best offers may end up smaller in money and shorter in years than many predicted or expected, leading some to presume that'll lead back to an inevitable reunion with the Warriors at a rate both sides are comfortable. But what follows that is incredibly interesting. Slater continues, quote, but that's not necessarily the case. Even if the Warriors eventually approach Thompson with a competitive offer, matching or exceeding the money in years, it has become increasingly conceivable, according to league sources, that Thompson will decide to leave regardless, searching for a fresh start in a different environment, detached from some of the built-up friction of the previous couple of seasons, end quote. That's Slater in The Athletic on Klay Thompson. Evan, it seems as if, even if eventually the Warriors' other plans fall short and they go back to Klay and say, all right, Klay, we'll give you 3 for 70 or whatever the number is, Klay might be frustrated enough by the Warriors now that he says, no, I'm leaving anyway.
Yeah, it's as much about the money as it is about the respect, and the two are probably tied together. So, you know, Klay Thompson is a very prideful person, and I think the Warriors right now are kind of calling his bluff. And he might not be the person you want to try.
We're calling the market's bluff in general, too.
Yeah, well, especially when you see the Malik Monk deal. I mean, I thought Monk might be able to court something from a different team. And who knows, maybe he just turned down more money from a different place because he feels like Sacramento is a spot for him. But when I saw Malik Monk get less than $20 million, my first thought was, I think Klay can get 20, but I also don't necessarily know if it would be from the Warriors.
The Warriors are betting that he might not. Seems like.
Well, I mean, Bobby Marks last summer and then, of course, earlier this year has still been throwing the number 30 out. I think we can throw the number 30 out. Like, Klay Thompson is not going to make $30 million a year next season unless it's a one-year deal, a flyer deal with somebody who overpays.
Yeah. Yeah, does not seem that way. That's for sure. All right, time for a break here on 95.7 The Game. We got an hour left with you, and we're talking Klay and the Warriors offseason because we have some developing news via Anthony Slater, our Warriors insider. Klay Thompson and the Golden State Warriors are not currently negotiating, and the Warriors haven't even offered him a deal this offseason, according to reports. More on that on the other side. It's Evan Giddings and Mark Randy with you. More next on 95.7 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.